points to that we've been talking about is that there are a great number of cases where deaths have occurred under rather suspicious conditions. And if the official reports on these deaths indicate that everything was up and up, you know, in some cases I'll say it's justifiable homicide, in other cases I'll say it was suicide or accidental death or something like that, what this points out is you can't always trust these official proclamations, these official findings, but we have been so conditioned to accept them that the man on the street generally will say, would your government lie to you, or something to that effect.
And if somebody wants to show that the person, the official in quotes, is not telling the truth or doing a job that he shouldn't be doing, then they discredit him by saying he's crazy and fire him. And it's only because Noguchi has guts, or that I have guts. It took him 3 years to find that the man wasn't anything at all. But it takes years. But maybe all of our information can be passed on to other people now. So any other justifiable homicides, they will have to go in to the civil service requirements of certain positions of power and demand that people go into the degrees before you accept the conclusion.
Well, I'm sure you've had this laid on you. I'm sure a great many of our listeners will start talking to their friends about some of the things they've heard you say on this program. And their friends will say, well, where'd you hear that? And I say, well, this Mae Brussel, who was on KLRB, said such and such and so and so. Well, she must be nuts. And it's only a couple of conversations later that it turns out that it's just an absolute established fact that Mae Brussel is a total ding-a-ling, you know, and that you don't know what you're talking about. And these people, a great number of them have never even heard the program, much less are totally unaware of the volumes and volumes and volumes of research that you have, and the mass files of documents and proofs that you have, and the evidence that you have. They're totally unaware of that, but they'll pass judgment on you because what you're saying sounds so fantastic.
Yeah, I know. I have brought in, just to conclude that one subject, I brought in the computer and automation issue of September 1970. I've asked the Monterey Library to start taking those, and when they get them, or you can go to Monterey College, September 1970, they have an article called Patterns of Political Assassinations, How Many Coincidences Make a Plot, and then they have one on the Black Panthers and the conspiracy to kill them off, and they list all the killings and how they occurred, and they fed them into a computer and compared it to certain systems in Germany and realized that these cases are not coincidental. They listed 19 cases of the Panthers in this issue, and there's been about 20 more. But I will send the computer and automation this article on the killings in Los Angeles so they can begin to go into the inquest office and find out what happened.
Well, this is more or less what you've been doing. You've been compiling a lot of information, and then when a name pops up, well, you do a cross-reference on it and say, where have I heard that name before? Does he appear here? Does he appear there? You've been doing the work of an analog computer.
A little think tank. I wrote
And I think it's very interesting that this Computers and Automation was a trade magazine for people who were in the computer business. It was a scientific magazine, and I don't know where, but somewhere along the way, they started feeding some information about assassinations into these computers.
And they do it every month now.
And they came up with the same answers you were getting. You know, the same people were showing up at the same places and all that. And somebody at this magazine got very suspicious and said, well, look, let's make a project out of this. And now here's a trade magazine called Computers and Automation, which every issue concerns itself with assassinations.
Every single issue is a complete trade magazine, except information on political assassinations are fed in, different subjects are fed into the computer, and every month since May 1970, they have 3 or 4 or 5 pages, sometimes with 29 or 30 footnotes, of the source of the information that was put into the computer and the conclusions. So they have the political Panthers, the systematic killing of them, and I will send them the information of Los Angeles that these were, in fact, homicides, because the top coroner fought so badly with this man for saying they were justifiable when he knew they weren't, that he was attempting to fire him.
Now, if people don't believe Mae Brussel because they think maybe her judgment is off or something like that, these people are approaching it purely scientifically. With an unemotional machine doing all the comparisons and the...
Well, this is what I hope I'm doing, too.
Yeah, I say, but if they won't accept your word because you're a human being and they say that you're not scientific or something like that, Here's something that is validating everything that you've said.
That's right.
In a very scientific way.
It's
and they have
there.
No bones to, you know, they have no axes to grind or anything. They're working strictly on information and documentation and evidence.
They're adding
procedure.
Up all the murders, political assassinations and murders and so forth. You know, last week we talked briefly about an article that was in the Los Angeles Times magazine section. It was called Journey Through the Killing Ground. And it was by Robert Blair Kaiser, and we talked about, he wrote the book RFK Must Die, and he had a four-page article in the Los Angeles Times putting down any idea of the conspiracy and calling the researchers crazies. But I wanted to bring in today information, because Mr. Kaiser, it reveals himself in his biography that precedes the article. It tells you a bit about Robert Kaiser. And I once started a book called How to Kill a President, and it had 28 sections. I may still do it someday. And there's a link. I'm drawing of a link of a chain. Every link has to fit together, else the chain doesn't hold together. The assassination plot would fall apart if one link was weak. And one of the important links in that is the control of the media. And in this country, there's one branch of the media we're going to get down today, and that's Life Magazine that I want to talk about. Because if you don't control the New York Times and Life Magazine, you couldn't successfully get away with the political assassination, because the saying, one picture is worth a thousand words, is important. And Henry Luce, along with John Foster Dulles and Alan Dulles, was probably the most important man in affecting minds in America through life and time of any publication in the world has ever affected foreign affairs or policies. And in the introduction of his article, Putting Down Assassination Conspiracies, Robert Kaiser tells you that he was a writer in Arizona. First, he was a Jesuit priest for 10 years. He studied the priesthood. And then he was writing in Phoenix, Arizona, and Claire Booth Luce, he said, admired his work. And she introduced him to her husband. And in due course, Kaiser became he'd been writing 5 years with Time magazine. Now, in order to please Claire Luce in Arizona, that tells you in the first place where Robert Kaiser's head is at. I don't have to tell you much more, you know. Whitaker Chambers also worked for Time magazine, and then when Life came out, he was on the staff of Life. Claire Luce was very proud of the world as it was reported by Robert Kaiser. So she said, Henry, here's a nice young reporter. He should be on our staff, and he was there for 6 years. And then he left Time in 66 and went to work for Tom Brady's campaign, where he said, in quotes, he got thick with the Kennedy crowd. When the exposures came out on CIA foundations and conduit funds, Brady's office was right in on the top of the conduit and the secret funding of youth organizations and so forth, infiltrating universities. Tom Brady's whole group was filled with CIA. He went from there to Los Angeles, and this is what, in the article, his biography says. By 1968, he was a freelance writer, and he was working at his home. And in the morning after RFK's assassination, Life assigned him to the Sirhan story. And when the story came out 2 years later, he sent his copies to Arthur Schlesinger, P.N. Salinger, Teddy White, all of whom refused to read it, and sent the book back. Now, he is telling you that Life magazine sent him to Sirhan Sirhan. Now, what happens? He goes into his article, which I have here, and he says, this is the way the article reads, in June 68, another Kennedy was killed. I found a way of getting to the assassin, and I took it. He found a way. We're going to go into the Zapruder film that Life magazine bought the day of the assassination and loaned to the Warren Commission, minus a few shots and pictures altered and so forth. Life loaned the Warren Commission their copy of the Zapruder film, the only movie they had to use of the grassy knoll. So Kaiser found a way to get to the Sirhan, you see. And he said, I wanted to know more and more than I thought the officials would tell. So this is quotes, Robert Kaiser. So I talked with the assassin. I talked with him two or three times a week for 7 months. I went into the cell with his psychiatrist. I tape recorded his sessions with them, even his sessions under hypnosis, and I found that the assassin, Sirhan Sirhan, could not remember killing Kennedy, and that his declared motives didn't make sense. I was in the police department with him. He says neither the Federal Bureau of Investigation nor the Los Angeles Police Department were allowed to talk to the assassin. And listen to this. I mean, you know, when I came in the station, I had KLRB on the radio, and they had Winnie the Pooh on. I loved it, you know, because I have FM in my car. And I offered to bring my Alice in Wonderland in. You know, I have the full recording of the reading of Alice in Wonderland. And I offered to bring that in. They could play parts of that. I'm reading, like, Alice in Wonderland. Life magazine lets this man in, his most confidential, with his psychiatrist. He should be alone, Sirhan, the criminal and the psychiatrist. Since when does this third person from Life magazine sit in the most personal moments with the psychiatrist and his client? And the L.A. Police Department, he said the L.A. Police Department and the FBI had to reproduce their reconstruction of the event because, he said, they weren't allowed to talk with the assassin. End quotes right there, because I don't want to get too angry or emotional about this. I really get angry. Because just think about this man in that cell with that psychiatrist. He had access to documents that nobody else had. I brought an article here, a lawsuit going on in Washington, and this is the basis of my refusal to pay the taxes or to recognize Richard Nixon as the president until I get this information. This lawsuit in Washington, the right of equal access to government information. It was placed by Bernard Fenstermold and the Committee to Investigate Assassinations against the Justice Department, because Robert Kaiser had access to FBI reports and documents, FBI files 56 to 156. He had information that no one else in the United States government has. And if he's merely a journalist,
A freelance writer,
and other people have been working on political assassinations for 5 years up to that day and have document after document, we can't get them. And this is a lawsuit pending, which we've mentioned on the air many times. So Life sent him in to that room. Now, I'm going to say, what role did Life play in the John Kennedy murder? Because I'm telling you what happened in the Sirhan. In the first place, the minute the murder took place, Mr. Zapruder was standing on the street, and he sold his movie to Life magazine between its said either $25,000 to $1 million. No one's sure. It went right into their hands, and Zapruder never gave it, saw it again. And I realized, I have a list of all the other photographers that were in the street that day, that he was to be the official government photographer, that they were not to use the other cameras, because people on the street, that these were the men whose films were documented and played slowly and cross-filed for computer and automation, Mrs. Nix, Mrs. Muchmore, Mr. Hughes, Mr. Martin, Mr. Bell, Mr. Algins, Mrs. Moorman, Mr. Willis, Mr. Wigman, Rickerby, Mr. Couch, Mrs. Bond, Mr. Dorman, Mr. Dillard, and Mr. Weaver. All were on the grassy knoll. That's 12 or 14 people. No camera was used to look at their film of the assassination.
They had pictures.
Oh, yeah, they had thousands
of each one of these people you mentioned.
Of feet. It was the most photographed killing of a president. And the Warren Commission didn't use any of their pictures. And I have a chart here, Bob, I wish the people could see it, where these people were standing. And the researchers have looked at their films to see what they could see on the grassy knoll. You know, they see people being taken away by the police, and the police had no suspects later. But Life magazine took the Zapruder film, the famous Zapruder film, and they loaned it to the Warren Commission. The second thing Life magazine did was they gave Marina Oswald $5,000, and they published the cover of Lee Oswald holding a rifle and a gun right away. This is the assassin, this is the rifle and gun. Lee saw the negative before he was killed, and he said, I didn't have a gun, and that's my head, it's not my body. If you look at the body, they did a funny thing. They put some blue jeans on, and the pockets are backwards, and the pants are backwards. It's sort of a comical thing, and the researchers know now who the man's body was, that Lee's head was put on. But Life magazine took that pic, those negatives that were in the possession of Mrs. Payne and Mrs. Oswald, and they superimposed it. That picture caused consternation all over Europe because the shadows of the nose came straight down over his mouth where the sun would be. But where the body and the rifle go, the shadows of the rifle went in back. So the sun was in a different position.
Was in front of him, yeah.
But Life magazine told the whole world, see, one picture is worth 1,000 words or images. It took the place of words. Lee holding the rifle, one hand, a pistol in the other hand, and the militant communist paper coming out of his pocket. If there isn't anything incriminating about that, and they did that. Live magazine published the diary of Lee Harvey Oswald and gave Marina $20,000 for it. The spelling was wrong. The minute I got that issue of Life, I knew it was contrived. Every word was spelled wrong. In the same paragraph, he spelled the same word three different times. It was the kind of a way that they would imagine a deranged person would write. But in the Warren Commission documents, you have letters he writes to the State Department from Minsk to Washington, Minsk to Moscow, and Minsk to Texas. Nothing is spelled that way.
Very articulate. Grammatically correct. The construction was correct.
But and then Marina, under testimony, admitted that the diary was contrived for a purpose, but she was never really pressed how that diary was conceived or fingerprinted to see if he wrote it. No, they never fingerprinted the diary to see if his handwriting was on it. You see that he wrote it. Live magazine.
Did they ever have a handwriting analyst come in and compare it to other writings?
Oh, no, nothing. They never checked out the validity of the diary, and Live magazine could tell the whole world for, was it 35 cents in those days? Now it's 50 cents.
Well, this is the kind of thing that it really blows your mind, that just about any amateur photographer could look at that photograph that was on the cover of Life magazine and tell you that it was a composite,
it was
a phony photograph.
All of Europe talked about it, but the American press didn't get as much play. Because
now, don't you think that Life magazine should have some kind of charges brought against it, publishing a thing like that, because you know that their photography editor is a good photographer, and you know that he would recognize a phony picture when he saw it, but he allowed it to go through, and it went on the cover of Life magazine, and it purported to be a photograph of Lee Harvey Oswald, a legitimate photograph of him to all the nation at a crucial time in our history, and yet nothing has been said about it to this day.
No, the Warren Commission, right away when they charged it was a fake picture, the head superimposed, the Warren Commission had to account for that, so they took an agent by the name of Mr. Schoenfeld and put him out in the yard where Oswald was supposed to have taken the picture, and they have a photograph of him with his head off saying the shadows could have been this way. They couldn't wait. You know, they couldn't wait till April where the sun was in the same position. If it was taken in April 63, they could have waited till April 64. The Warren Report didn't come out until September 64. They could have duplicated the exact season and taken to show the world that those shadows could come that way, but it wouldn't work out that way. See, they had the time was in their favor, you see. If the Warren Report's come out in September and the picture was taken in November, you'd say we can't wait that long. But here they're doing, reproducing it, and can't make the shadows work. So Life magazine has a cover image of Lee Oswald with this communist literature. They have a cover image of pages on the diary.
They have a diary that a government witness, Marina Oswald, said was contrived,
which was
accepted into evidence without any research being made as to the handwriting or... Well, no expert testimony was even requested.
That's right. I'm going to run down, and maybe we'll read them if we have time. I want to talk about Life magazine. The night of the assassination at 6 o'clock, Marguerite Oswald said that they arrived at the home of Mrs. Payne, where Marina was living, and 5 minutes later, the Life magazine people were there, and Mrs. Payne said, "Oh, come on in. I was expecting you. I hope you brought color film." And Marguerite Oswald was just furious. Her son was charged with murdering the president. And Marina, it was being the hostess. Then at 9 o'clock, they went down to visit Lee Oswald at the jail, and Life magazine took Marguerite and Marina down to the jail. Then they said, "Well, you're not comfortable, Mrs. Payne's, you're crowded." So Life magazine paid the bill and took them to the Inn of Six Flags for several days and took care of that tab. An article for Time magazine about the assassination of Mrs. Payne's was written by Jessamine West. That's Nixon's cousin, his first cousin, who did that. Life magazine took the films of a man named Mr. Rocco. This is in volume 26, page 496, who knew Ruby for 2 years, and he was writing articles on various nightclubs and performers, and he went into the nightclub of Ruby's in November 63 and took some pictures of the interior of the Carousel Club. And Life magazine got the negatives from him, and he could never see them again, and he said that they were threatening to sue him if he talked about the subject. He's not to show any of these pictures or make any comments. And he had taken pictures inside the club, and he thought maybe one of them was Oswald, but he wasn't sure. But Life magazine has those negatives in their possession, and no one can have them. Mr. Roper is a man who talks about nightclubs all over the country, who innocently was inside Ruby's club.
Life never published those photographs.
No one has seen them. Life has those photographs.
And they probably spent a good amount of money for them.
Then when Mrs. Payne was asked right after the assassination, well, do you think Lee Harvey Oswald did it? And Alan Dulles asked her before the Warren Commission, what did you think, that Oswald was guilty? And Mrs. Payne said, well, it's difficult. She says, when the police asked me, I didn't think he had done it. There was doubt in my mind, and I didn't see, you know, what was happening. But it seems that the circumstantial evidence is powerful to me. She said, I went down and I saw all the diagrams that were showed to me by Life, and they seemed accurate. I mean, this is where Lee Harvey Oswald was living. Her husband, we went last week into Michael Payne. He's a designer of helicopters out at Bell Aerospace. We can't go every week into the background. These people, Life magazine convinced her that Oswald did it. Life, again, and then when it came time to reproduce, what happened was Life had pictures of the negative, and the Warren Commission called them on it because the FBI expert testified that the picture of Oswald holding the rifle was retouched. In February 21st, the FBI said that the negatives had been retouched. And the Western Union and Life magazine had a correspondence, and they sent back an answer saying that we're aware that the picture that appeared in Europe had a telescopic sight and that we had retouched it out. See, the first pictures that Life had of Oswald holding the gun, it had a telescopic sight, and it was supposed to have been taken in April 63. So Life admitted that they printed it without the sight, because the day of the assassination, a man in Irving, Texas, named Mr. Ryder, said, oh, in November 63, Oswald was in my shop, and I attached a sight onto the gun. See, so then that means that the picture taken in April didn't have the sight. So Life and Newsweek admitted that they wiped out the sight of the original pictures. Then 24 hours later, Klein's in Chicago said that gun was offered from us and it had a sight on it. So they reprinted the picture with the sight on. In volume 21, from page 449 to 457, if you go into the library, you can see the documents. Newsweek said to the Warren Commission in June 24th, I'm informed by our editors that the photograph they received was poor in quality and it was retouched to improve for reproduction. In retouching at Newsweek, the technician inadvertently brushed out the telescopic sight, which we have since had occasion to not see was visible, but only barely in the original. It says, of course, there was no intention to alter the substance of the photograph.
Well, any retoucher who does something like that just starts back and starts over again, makes a new negative, and corrects his mistake. He doesn't allow it to be printed.
Well, it went all
but
over.
What appears to me is, okay, say Life magazine were really sincere and straight and out front about the whole thing. If they had a photograph and they said, well, wait a minute, this photograph doesn't fit the evidence,
they would hold on to the photograph.
Then being in the news media, they should say, I wonder if there's something wrong with the evidence, because we have a photograph here that doesn't match that evidence. No, what they did was they altered the photograph so that it would fit the evidence.
And then when the evidence changed, they altered the photograph again. That's right. You can they block out things, they make them lighter or darker.
Without speculating about motives or anything, that does seem a strange thing for a national publication
to do. It is totally wrong. We can talk about, we won't talk about motives. If a picture has a scope and in taken in April, and the scope turned out to be attached in November at Mr. Ryder's, look for some other gun or look for another person. You can't keep altering the picture to fit the man. This is what they did with famous Bullet 399. We're going to do a show in March on that when Mr. Cutler comes out. He's a professor at a university back east, and he's going to be here visiting. I mean, he's done a lot of work for computer and automation, and he's written a book called Two Flight Paths on the famous bullet that was supposed to have done all the damage. And he'll show you how they can change everything as it goes along if it doesn't fit the original thesis.
Well, on the other hand, nowadays we have some magazines such as Earth Magazine. I wanted to bring this up because you outraged a lot of people early in this series when you suggested the possibility, and Dick Gregory has mentioned it also, that perhaps our government is responsible for a lot of the heroin that's coming into this country. And just last week, in their current issue, Earth Magazine
documents this fact.
Brought out a very well documented story of the CIA bringing opium and heroin into this country through machinations that involved their ownership of an airlines.
But see, I think
and there was a press conference in San Francisco this past week in which an ex-CIA employee testified that he witnessed this happening. He witnessed the planes being loaded and all that sort of thing. I didn't see anything on United Press about that.
Or Associated Press. No, you see, I don't deny that we need intelligence information in this world. But, again, we are supposed to be gathering intelligence. We're not supposed to be bringing drugs into the country to make the blacks and the youth a bunch of zombies. The older people aren't going to fight the system, and you zonk out the young ones, and what do you have left? I think that we have to get some sanity back into the systems that are set up and weed out people like this Dr. Stewart in Los Angeles or the airplanes that are bringing opium
in. And the
in.
Reason the older people aren't going to fight the system is because through working hard within the system, they have achieved a certain amount of security and comfort and all the things that this article that you began the program with was talking about. Now the young people are more concerned about comfort and security and a good, strong financial
basis.
They
just trust us, that's right.
Yeah, and they're all completely finished with the 60s and the violence and all the disturbances, and nobody's going to be disturbed anymore because we're going to have plenty.
And we're more violent than ever.
Yeah. But as long as the individual feels that his life and his security isn't threatened, so long as he plays the game,
he's going to be quiet.
He's going to be fine. He's going to be just fine.
Well, this is what my family says. You know, America's good to you, and it's the best possible of all countries, and I agree with both of those points. You know, America is the best country, and it has been good to me. But we cannot systematically murder innocent people in our society and drug them and think that the country's going to remain good. I want a strong America. And
you want to keep a good America.
I want to keep a good America. And if we are doing these things, I want to expose them to it so that we have a strong youth who can face a difficult situation or a murder and say, I see what happened, and go on from there, hopefully to prevent a succession of murders. See? Ted Kennedy says, I can't run, I'd be killed. Everybody knows he'd be killed. Computer Automation had an article, McGovern ran, he'd be killed. What kind of a country is this, even though we survived the past, that we have to look through the future of either having Humphrey or Muskie or Nixon for president? There's other people in this nation to choose from. I could listen, you know, they are selected for us, and I want to show that anybody who has the guts or courage to face the real issues will be killed, and I want that machinery of killing stopped so we can face the real issues. Now, before we close, I want to tell everybody to do a little homework between now and when we meet next week. Esquire magazine, March, this issue, has an article, Are You Sure Who Killed Martin Luther King? You know, when we started on the air in June, I was saying that the assassinations would be the most important thing of 72 to come out. And I want you to read the article on Are You Sure Who Killed Martin Luther King? And next week, we'll do one whole show, hopefully, on just James Ray and Martin Luther King. And I think you're going to have a surprise when you read this article about who is accused. One man, Mr. Stoner, the white racist in the South, was offered $25,000 by the FBI to kill King. And he wouldn't, because then they could pin it to him. You see, if it comes from the top down, you can't pin it on anybody. They have to do their own murders with their own agents.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Haynes, the attorney for James Ray, who was fired because he was a former FBI man, and he's a very responsible man. And they said specifically, who do you think did it? And he feels that it either was a black racist group of the CIA, and he tells you why he thinks it's one of those organizations, and you know which one I think it was. And Mr. Haynes is a conservative, white man who represents the racist kind of person in the South most of the time, and they are outraged at what's going on with the Martin Luther King, and both say that James Ray didn't fire the gun and didn't kill him, that the gun that was registered to James Ray, he bought. A bullet was in Martin Luther King, it killed him. The gun and the bullet don't match.
And James Earl Ray was, his lawyer pleaded guilty for him, I think.
Well, Haynes was knocked out of the case because he wanted to say it was a
conspiracy.
So.